This is Digital Story Podcast number 518, February 9th, 2016. Today's theme is From Lightroom and Aperture to Capture One. I'm Derek Story. Over the last year, we've been talking about photo management software and how to cope with change. One question that comes up, can I move my existing work to a new application? It's a good question, and I have some helpful information for Lightroom and Aperture users contemplating a transition to Capture One Pro. And that will be the top story of today's show. We get tied into things, right? We get tied into camera systems. We get tied into computer operating systems, even cars and so forth. You know, we just sort of find ourselves, hey, this is what I've been using. So when it's time to re-up, I'm just going to stick with the same thing because it's the path of least resistance. And for the most part, you know, that's not a bad way to go, especially if we made a good decision in the first place. Aperture users, of course, as we've talked about on this show, don't really have a choice. They have to do something at some point because they're going to run out of road. At some point, an OS update is not going to support Aperture. And then you're faced with either freezing your computer in time or making a change. And I always think it's a lot easier to make a change before you have to. Always easier. Because you're doing it on your own terms, right? For the last, half of 2014, this conversation was primarily focused on Aperture users, you know, making a change to something else. But many Lightroom users have become a bit disenchanted also. And I think it started with, you know, obviously Creative Cloud and the subscription model. But then, it went through, you know, some of the updates that weren't so good. Performance slowdowns, you know, Lightroom users are seeing that. You know, and then, of course, you know, capped off by the import dialog box debacle. So, you know, there are really candidates on both sides of the fence here. And Capture One Pro, after a whole lot of research, became the app that I recommend to folks that are thinking of making a move from either Lightroom or Aperture. And there's a couple reasons for that. I'm going to give you the couple reasons, and then I'm going to talk a bit about actually making the move and what you can do. And I'm going to tell you right up front, I've been really involved in this whole idea because I was working on an ebook for Rocky Nook Publishing, a free ebook, one that you can download today, on how to make the move, moving to Capture One Pro. So we'll talk a bit more about that. But in that ebook, I have step-by-step instructions for both Lightroom users and Aperture users. And what I'm going to do today is just give you an overview of that process. You don't have to write any of this down. You can just listen and enjoy, because if you decide that you do want to do something like this, the book's right there. You just download it and off to the races you go. So why did I pick Capture One Pro? Well, first of all, it works on both Windows and Mac platforms, and it works pretty much the same on both, which I think is a real plus. It's one of the things that I like about Lightroom. Second, I think the raw processing on Capture One Pro is as good as any that I've ever seen anywhere. And that's saying a lot. When people ask me, well, what is it that you like about the raw processing? The images look more like photographs. I know that sounds weird. And maybe it's a little bit of that film look, more natural. Whatever it is, they just have more life to them than some of the raw processing that I've seen from Lightroom and even Aperture. And I like the raw processing in Aperture. So the raw processing is definitely near the top of the list. And then the other thing beyond that, I would say, is that the library management is very good. It's very good. That's something, and especially if you're coming from Aperture, you're used to. And Capture One Pro is the app that comes closest to what we experience in Aperture. So those are the three biggies: cross-platform, outstanding raw processing, and great library management. And those things alone, I think, are, you know, worth considering a move if you're dissatisfied with your current situation. Now, can you bring your stuff in? The 800-pound gorilla, the big question: can you bring your other stuff in? Well, you can. You can. However, in the ebook, and this is what we're going to be talking about for the next few minutes, in the ebook, I recommend a very conservative approach. Here's the way that I think you should test this capability. First of all, I walk you through how to create a test library for Lightroom users and for Aperture users. And I just walk you through the steps on creating one. What is a test library? Well, it's basically a library that has not very many pictures, 30, 45, 60, something like that, and has a mini structure that reflects how you organize in the app, you know, that you're using full time. So in my case, it would have projects. It would have albums inside of projects. It would have a folder that holds the projects. It would have some slideshows and some other goodies. And so what you do in the test library is this: create a very small, a very portable version of that represents what you do on a larger scale with your application. The reason why I say a test library is because you're going to learn a lot by testing the import and playing with how that import plays out, how the import looks in Capture One Pro. You're going to learn a lot, and you want to learn those lessons in a very easy way. And especially if there are any gotchas, you want to learn that on a test library. You don't want to learn it on your big library. When I get mail from someone who is unhappy about trying to make a move, trying to move from Aperture to Lightroom, trying to move from Lightroom to Capture One Pro, trying to make a move. When I get mail from someone that's unhappy about that, 9 times out of 10, it's because they tried to move thousands and thousands and thousands of images into the new home all at once, and something went wrong, and then it's a big mess, and then they're upset. Don't do that. I mean, that I cannot put it any more simply. I know it's tempting. I know you don't want to spend time on this. I know you just want it done. If you could wave a magic wand and end up in your new home, you probably would. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that at all. So what you need to do is create a small test library, and then I make a couple copies of it just so I have them, and then go through the same steps that you would with a larger library. Take notes along the way and learn what happens. So that is step number one, is make that test library. And again, in the ebook, I show you step by step. It's so easy. You can just take a collection in Lightroom or an album in Aperture and make it a catalog or a library standalone. It's super simple. Now, once you have that, and then you open a new catalog in Capture One. And Capture One has both sessions and catalogs. For the work that we're going to be doing, you're going to be working with a catalog. A session came out of the tethered world, which is what Capture One started as. And it's great for certain situations, certain temporary situations. But a catalog is more your home base. So you'd create a new catalog in Capture One Pro. Of course, I show you how to do that. And then there is an actual import command in the application. One says import, you know, from Aperture. Another one says import from Lightroom. And you just use that command. And it is good. It is so much better than the import from Aperture command that's in Lightroom and some of the other things that I've seen out there. This actually works very well. And what it does is, what Capture One does, is it brings all that content in, sets it up as a referenced catalog. Now, Capture One Pro has the ability to have a managed catalog where everything is in one container, or a referenced catalog where everything is in one container except your masters that can live somewhere else. When it does this import from Aperture Lightroom. It sets up a reference scenario. Now you can change that to a managed scenario if you want, and I explain how to do that in the ebook. But initially it'll set up a referenced situation. Now if you're an Aperture user and you had a managed library, that managed library container is the source for your new Capture One reference library. So the masters that are buried down in that Aperture container, Capture One finds them, notes them, logs them into its database, and those are the masters. So you can't throw away your Aperture library once you've done that import in Capture One unless you move those masters out, which you can do. And it's actually very easy. You do it in the Capture One interface. But just a note. So this is, again, this is where test library is such a big deal, right? Because this is all the stuff you want to learn with a little test library. What comes through? Well, all sorts of stuff comes through. Your projects or your collections, depending on which app you're using. Your albums come through. Smart albums don't come through, or smart collections don't come through on either application. So if you depend a lot on smart albums or smart collections, what you have to do before you do the import is open up that smart album, select all the images in there, create a new album, let's say in Aperture, and then put those images in there and label it. Once it's a flat album, once it's a regular album, it will transfer intact, but smart albums and smart collections don't. So that's one of the little pieces of prep work you have to do before you do the import. Interestingly enough, some image edits do come through. So if you're an Aperture user, it's pretty cool. Crop comes through and straighten, rotation, flip, exposure, brightness, highlights, shadows, definition, saturation, and black and white adjustments. All of those come through. And, you know, that was the big, and it's very similar for Lightroom too. And that was, and I list them all out in detail, of course, in the ebook. But that was always one of the gotchas before, right? So the pictures would come through maybe. Star ratings would come through. They do here also, by the way. Keywords come through. Metadata comes through. All that comes through. But then the work that you did on the images themselves would not come through. Well, in this scenario, bringing either Lightroom or Aperture into Capture One Pro, not all of your image work comes through, but I'll tell you, the bulk of it does. Unless you did, you know, a lot of localized adjustments and things like that, that's not going to come through. But, you know, all the cropping that you did, all the star rating that you did, the exposure adjustments that you did, straightening the images, all that stuff comes through. Well, that is a lot of work. I mean, that is the bulk of what you did. And I have to say, when you look at the raw processing, because the images are reprocessed, those raw files are reprocessed in the new application, and new previews are generated, that makes them look better too. So you don't get everything back, but you get a lot back. Again, take pictures in your test catalog that have some of these image edits applied to them, bring them into Capture One Pro, see how they look. And you can go to the editing panels in Capture One Pro and actually see that the sliders have been moved. It's really kind of neat. So then what happens? Okay, so you bring in your test catalog, you play with it, you learn some stuff, and then you take notes. Okay, you know what? This didn't work out so well. I don't like the way this looked. The structure is pretty good, but you know what? If I go back to my application and I maybe flatten out some of these things, smart albums, whatever, you know, you take some notes on how you want it improved. You go back to your test catalog, your test library in the native app, Aperture Lightroom, make those adjustments, export again, import again, see how they look. Keep playing with this. Play with, if you want to manage library, following the instructions in the ebook on moving those reference masters into the Capture One catalog container. Or if you want, you know, just a straight reference library, play with moving those masters around, connecting them, all that kind of stuff. Test everything that you can think of to test and take notes along the way. Then, Once you feel like you have your system down for making the transition from either of these apps, then you can move a bigger catalog or library over. Now, I don't recommend doing the whole nine yards myself. The way that I'm doing it is that I have smart albums of images that are, you know, my best work, or my favorite work anyway. So what I'm doing from 2015, 14, 13, 12, and so forth, is that I'm bringing that content into my master Capture One catalog. But I'm not bringing everything in. I'm really bringing over the good stuff. Because I still have access to my master Aperture library, and I still have access to my master Lightroom library. So if I needed to find something obscure, I could do that. I could dig around in those libraries to search or whatever system I had, find what I needed, and then either work on it in that app or bring that into Capture One Pro. But I am not bringing everything over. Now, what am I going to do up the road when Aperture no longer runs on my latest operating system? Well, I'll have to make a decision. Probably the decision I'm going to make is stopping a computer, freezing it in time at whatever it happens to be, El Capitan or the next OS where Aperture runs, and then leaving an Aperture library that's available. That's most likely what I'm going to do. Now, I know that I have some time on this, and so I'll be thinking about that when it's time to upgrade my hardware. I'll be thinking about, all right, my hardware moving forward will be just my Capture One stuff, photos for OS 10, those, and probably Exposure X. Those are the apps I'm using the most right now. And then this machine that I have right now will stay my Aperture machine, and I'll budget accordingly and factor all that in. That's the way I'm going to do it. You may decide to do it differently. You really may. I mean, you know, if you've been running a referenced library in Aperture, and of course Lightroom users have a reference library already, maybe if your reference library, if your masters are organized well, maybe you just leave them where they are and you point a different app to them. You know, you point the, you know, On One's browser app to them or whatever, and just do that. So there are always options for, you know, that final stage. But at some point, I think you're in an archive situation where you want to have those, all those files available to you. You want to be able to move forward with the new thing. And that's the part that you're going to have to figure out. The good news is that at any time, pretty much, the parts of your existing libraries that you love, you can bring in, and you can bring those in over time. Like, you can do your first batch of your favorite stuff, and then later on you go, you know what, I want to bring the summer of 2014 in. I did a lot of great jobs then. So then you take the summer of 2014, you export it out of Lightroom or Aperture as a standalone library, you bring that into Capture One Pro, and then you go ahead and file it away and get it organized and integrated in your existing library. By doing this in pieces, though, is going to be so much easier. And the last point I want to make on this is that you're going to learn things about Capture One Pro as you use it. You're going to learn about how you like to organize and how you like to edit and all that kind of stuff. So it's a lot easier to learn those lessons with a few hundred or even a few thousand images, that if you change your mind on how you structure things, you can do so in a half an hour or something, than to learn those things and change your mind with tens of thousands of images. Just be patient, really. Just be patient during the transition. So if any of this sounds doable, workable, usable to you, go over to rockynook.com and download the free ebook. I have a link to it in the show notes. Of course I do. That'll take you directly to the ebook page. All you do is enter your email address. That will put you on their newsletter. It's a very good newsletter. They do not share your name with other people. They do not sell their lists. They don't do any of that. They guard your personal information. And actually, the information that you get in the newsletters, which don't come out that often, is very helpful. There's a lot of discounts and freebies in there. If you're okay with that, which I hope you are, because, you know, I really love them. then get the free ebook. Read it. Pay attention to the cautions that I put in there. Try it with a test library and see what you think. I think it's very exciting. I tell you, now that I've done it, now that I have moved into Capture One Pro, I'm loving it. I'm really excited, and I'm doing all my work in it now, and you know, all my master work in it, my commercial work, and I'm having a blast. And then the last thing I'll say is that my Linda training on Capture One Pro is in editing, and it's going to be out before too long. Over 100 movies on using that application. I really feel like I made those movies very accessible, very easy. This does not have to be painful. And if you want to do it, I'm going to try to help you have it be as smooth as possible. In the news, Instagram finally lets you log into multiple accounts, covered by Petapixel. If you have two or more Instagram accounts, perhaps one for personal and one for business, Instagram has some great news for you this week. The company is finally rolling out multi-account support, which lets you log into multiple accounts in one app and quickly switch between them. This official announcement comes just weeks after some Android and iOS users began seeing the feature in their apps. There are step-by-step instructions on the Instagram help page, which we have a link to because we're linking to the story. And the Petapixel page features a short video that shows you how easy it is to switch between the accounts. And as I said, I have the link to all of that in the show notes. But great news for people that have multiple Instagram accounts. You can now just switch among them in Instagram. You don't have to use any of these wonky third-party apps that never really worked that well for me. So I'm thrilled about this, and yay! Oh, those embarrassing moments. So I want to do something that I haven't done on this show, which is read a piece from the Nimble Photographer Journal. Now, you may or may not be aware that I have a journal called thenimblephotographer.com, and I post there at least weekly, sometimes more than once. And it's a nice little world because it's unlike anything else that I do, where it's really more than anything else, just me working my way through the world of photography and life, following the philosophy of being nimble. And I have anecdotes in there, I have tips, I have all sorts of stuff. So I thought I would read you a piece this week. You know, it's the piece that I just put in, so that if you're not listening to the journal, you might want to check it out. And you can get an RSS feed. It's a Squarespace site, so it shows up great on iOS devices, shows up great on Android devices, all that kind of stuff. So let me read you a piece that I just put in called, Oh, Those Embarrassing Moments. It was bad enough that I was the only guy with a film camera in Austin. Here we were, a group of professional photojournalists testing state-of-the-art digital device, with me discreetly pulling out a Contax G1 every now and then. No wonder he's an independent, someone must have thought. Yet I persisted, although quietly as possible. One moment that I couldn't resist, however, was at the Mean-Eyed Cat Bar. We had been there for a bit taking a break, and I parted from the group to explore with the G1. I just loved the interior of that place. When no one was looking, I pulled the camera out of my bag, propped it up on the table, turned on the self-timer, and pressed the shutter button. There was no actual need to work that quickly. I was just nervous about making a scene. The exposure, however, seemed to be taking painfully long. About 10 seconds into it, Steve Huff walked by. He's a nice guy, but we hadn't really interacted much on the strip. What are you doing? He asked. I thought I'd capture a few frames of this great interior, I replied. Oh, really? He asked. With the lens cap on? The front of the camera had been hidden from my view, but sure enough, as I looked over it to inspect the glass, the lens cap was securely in place. I guess that would explain the very long exposure, wouldn't it? I'm sure it would, he said, and then continued on his way. I most likely won't be getting any freelance offers from Steve Huff Photo. Too bad. It looks like a terrific site. But after I removed the lens cap, I did get a beautiful shot. That's the kind of stuff I like to do on that site, and I just wanted to share that story with you. So freaking embarrassing. You know, and, you know, Steve was a guy that actually, you know, I would have liked to have a conversation with. I had some wonderful conversations with, you know, the other photographers there, you know, the writer from DP Review, the creator, the photographer, you know, all those guys. You know, I had great conversations. And, you know, I was hoping to have something like that with Steve, too. Steve Huff Photo is a terrific site. If you haven't been there, you should go look at it. He's, you know, he's really personable, and he works hard, and, you know, he writes about his view of all these different techniques and pieces of gear. But after this lens cap incident at the Mean Eyed Cat bar, I didn't dare approach him. I just, you know what, you know, some things just aren't going to happen, and I'm pretty sure that one's never going to happen. I'm sure he thinks I'm a total doof. But anyway, that is a piece from thenimblephotographer.com. If you like that sort of stuff, if you like me making a crazy fool of myself, then good place to hang out. Member quotes of the week. Intelligent comments culled from the Digital Story Facebook page. In regard to last week's Facebook post, "What is the fascination with retro?" we had some terrific comments, and I want to share one of them with you now. Andrew wrote, "My recent interest in film cameras probably started more from a collector standpoint. I started rebutting some of my camera history, mostly for nostalgic reasons. Once you get these cameras back in your hands, they feel so good you just want to use them. I don't think I would go back, though. I like what digital photography gives me. It's just like I wouldn't relinquish word processing for a typewriter. My brain is now rewired for digital. But it doesn't mean that I don't enjoy the occasional analog holiday. In fact, I am planning to make one day a month in 2016 an analog-only day. I don't think an interest in film is predicated on nostalgia. My son is of the digital native generation, and he asked for a film camera for his birthday. He had been enjoying using the OM lenses on his A7S and wanted the full OM experience." I just thought that what Andrew wrote was really interesting because, as you know, I'm trying to get to the bottom of this whole analog situation myself. And, you know, there are so many pieces to it. One is that I will say that the millennium generation seems very interested, you know, a portion of the millennium generation seems very interested in analog photography. So I'm curious about that. I was away from it for 10 years. And I'm shooting again, sometimes with the lens cap on, sometimes not. And I'm really enjoying the experience, and I'm learning things about my digital photography as a result. So that part fascinates me. What's happening with Kodak and, you know, all the Kickstarter programs around analog film and so forth. So that's interesting to me. And then, of course, the cameras themselves, the modern cameras that look a lot like, many of them are based upon the design aesthetic from cameras from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. So, all, you know, you throw all this, you know, into a pot. And, of course, then I was shooting with the Olympus Pen F, which is a direct descendant from the original Pen F, which was a half-frame camera. So you throw this all into the pot, and I think it's very interesting. And I think Andrew made a lot of good points here, and that's why I wanted to share his comments on this week's Member Quotes of the Week. updates and such. I got all sorts of goodies here. This is kind of neat. The Digital Story Podcast is coming to Google Play Music. I just caught this in the wind that Google Play Music is adding full-fledged podcast support. And I was thinking, wow, that's really neat. So I went over there and nosed around, submitted the digital story, and they, you know, reviewed it. And you got to go through this whole process. You got to make sure that your feed is a certain way and you have the right tags. And then they actually have a human being review it. And it passed review. I'm pretty jazzed about it. And if you're a new listener tuning in from Google Play Music, welcome. You know, we're happy to have you here. We have just really a terrific audience and a great community. The way I look at it, the more the merrier. You can find out more about it by going to https://play.google.com/music/listen, or the easy way, just go to the show notes and click on the link that I've put there. I mentioned Out of Chicago last week in that we opened up a new Nimble Photographer workshop. We got two of them now. So we got one on Thursday, Friday, and then the Out of Chicago conference itself. Very exciting. If you want to attend the debut Nimble Photographer workshop and you're in the Midwest on June 23rd, June 24th, that time frame, go to the Out of Chicago website. And of course, I have a link to it in the show notes. Sign up for the conference, sign up for the workshop. Let's have a blast. I'm so excited to be out in the Midwest and, you know, visiting with folks that are part of our audience there that haven't been able to make it out here. So I'm going to come to you. Last few weeks, I've mentioned that Gemini from MacPaw is the duplicate finder, and it is a very intelligent one. It's simple, it's fast, it's safe to use. You can give it a try by going to macpaw.com/Gemini. MacPaw is a sponsor of the Digital Story. They're going to have a new announcement coming up here in a few weeks. I'm pretty jazzed about that. But in the meantime, they have Clean My Mac, Clean My Drive, Gemini, all those great applications for Mac users at macpaw.com. Go over there and take a look. And are you using promo code STORY to save 25% at inkdot.com? 25% off one of those fantastic wood prints made on birch. So pretty, so handsome. And so, you know, the thing is, if you make a wood print on this birch, then you want to have it where people can lift it up off the wall, with your permission, of course. Lift it off the wall and hold it, because that is part of the experience, feeling the quality and just how good the wood feels in your hand, and then how beautiful the image looks on that birch. And that happens over at inkdot.com. And if you use the promo code STORY, STORY, you can save 25%. Our friends at Red River Paper, God bless them. They're the reason why I'm going to be in Chicago. And man, you know, that's getting behind your podcast, right? Not only do they support the podcast, but they support the podcaster getting out and being able to visit listeners in different parts of the U.S. And we're working on some presentations where we might hit the road talking about printing. And it just shows you that how passionate these folks are at Red River Paper about printing. They really are into it. They love it. And go over to the site, explore, read the articles, you know, check out the tutorials, look at the different types of paper, look at the other supplies that you can get there, such as ink and envelopes and all that. Really, it is, you know, heaven for people who love printing. And if you don't love printing, I just read an article the other day, again, saying, if you truly want to protect your photography, make a print of it. I could not have said it better myself. Red River Paper has a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story and a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And finally, a big thanks to the folks over at Image Framer. They are supporting this podcast and they have set up a special landing page for you. Go over there and take a look at it. After you make your print, and then you want to think about how to present it. Do you want to put it in a mat? Do you want to put it in a frame? What do you want to do with it? Image Framer has all the components for you so that you can put the color of the wall, you can put the kind of mat that you're thinking about, you can put the kind of frame, play with all those combinations, get it exactly the way you want. Print that out, take it to the supply store or the mat shop, and then when you put it on the wall after you do that work, you know it's going to look fabulous. And you can use it for digital stuff. And I'm learning some new techniques about masking with it, where you can combine pieces of image. I haven't quite mastered it yet, but when I do, I'm going to talk to you about it. This is an app that can do all sorts of stuff. It's a great sandbox for playing with your images. I have a link to Image Framer, our landing page, in the show notes. Go over there, take a look at the options, show them some love, because you know what? They're loving us. Alrighty, that's going to do it for this week. I've got a great show already halfway written for next week. Come back and join me. Thanks so much. Until then, bye-bye now.